outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
Man, I don't know what's going on, man. I don't. Tara's book came out this week. A couple podcasts back, we had Tessa Sandberg, or so many different names, Tessa Van Wade, her new book, Out of the Shadows. And I posted this thing on my blog about seeing Erek in the wild, this name that's from the book in this urinal in this outside Bakersfield, California. And then last night, Sarah and I were going out to dinner, and her book's just released. And I'm, unfortunately, I hate to admit this, I know people really get mad at me, I'm reading the second book, and I'm telling you what, if you only read the first book so you can read the second has been, and this is not an overstatement, has been changing my life. I'm going through a very situation similar to the one in the book, a very toxic relational kind of thing. And I'm telling you what, this book has been, it has just helped God find its way into new places in my heart is the best way to say it, but it's the second book, so I know it's just rude to talk about it. Anyway, I'm reading it, and one of the characters that's big in the part of the book that Sarah and I are reading right now is Sassy, S-A-S-S-I, and it's just, it's kind of, again, a weird name like Iraq. I don't know where Tessa came up with this stuff. So I'm taking Sarah out to dinner last night, and we're doing a little running an errand, and I pulled behind this car at a stoplight, and on the license plate is Sassy. S-A-S-S-I,
no way.
Yes, with a heart and then an R. Oh, I don't know what the R is for or the heart, but Sassy loves R, Robert, I don't know. I just went, if it would have been a G there, because G-O, I think, is her love in the book. Whatever, I'm not sure I get all straight, but oh my God, I looked at it and went, oh my God, if I see another one of those names, like Remy is the other, if I see that name in the wild, I'm going to take this book out of the fiction department, because now all of a sudden, man.
The Valley area really out there. It's true. Like, we're moving from moving into nonfiction.
It is the strangest thing. I've never had that kind of thing where I'm tangentially involved with this book. Okay. I've been kind of coaching and cheerleading for my friend Tessa and you guys, because you and Jess are publishing it. And I'm excited to see it out there. I'm excited that people are gonna get to read it finally. And then to see this name again, and I just go, God, what are you doing? Why? This has never happened before. People say, oh, it's just coincidence. Like, yeah, it's never happened before. Where I've seen characters from books whose names appear in the wild. And one of the things, Sassy is a supercar driver in the story, right? She's the gal you want behind the wheel when you're evading the bad guys. And so now I'm parked behind this little, whatever, Nissan Leaf.
Ouch.
Yeah, I was going to say, this was a fancy sports car. I'd have more to say. But anyway, I just find that stuff fascinating.
I was going to say, if Sassy was Art G, was on the back of a Ferrari.
Or a Geo. What if it was on a Geo? Oh, my gosh. It just been kind of, okay. And I'm, like I said, Sarah and I are just toward the end of the second book, and it is really... It's been deeply meaningful to me. I know people are a year out from seeing that one, but believe me, the first one is the whole setup to that, and also has some very deep, wonderful things that were helpful to me. So yeah, go for it.
Anyway. Oh, the first one's phenomenal. And I can't, like, I remember the first time I worked through it and I got to the end and I was like, okay, Tessa, you can't hold me here. Like, this is too intense of an ending to leave me sitting right here. Like, this is not okay, especially if I have to wait a period of time to be able to get the second book.
And I'm afraid she's going to do that in book two as well. So I'm going to get to the end of book two going, crud, now I got to fight the third one out of her. So anyway, Sarah and I read it on our trip to Denver. So that was kind of fun. Okay. We had this book to read, and we were also listening to a book on tape. We had a great time with our son. Great time to be in Denver and enjoy. But it was hot. It was hot there. Oh my gosh, it was hot there, and it's hot there this week.
Oh, we've been hotter. My mom was in Central Valley, so just right outside of Visalia. Yeah, yeah. It was hotter in Wyoming than it was in Central Valley, which should not happen.
It's been great. It's hot here, which is rare for us because we're near the ocean. But anyway, I'm Wayne Jacobson,
and I'm Kyle Rice,
and we want to welcome you to the God Journey. I've been finally. After we've been kind of chatting around it, Lewis and I sat down on Saturday to begin to record some of the story of his father's death and a very harrowing night out on the mountain as his father dies with him. And it's a incredibly painful podcast. And yet God kind of is revealing himself in all of that in some interesting ways that ties up with Raphael Return. So I am deeply in the middle of editing all that now and I'm excited that we'll finally have that part of the story to add on to My Friend Lewis and then the moment with Raphael returning. And then that story will make much more sense in light of the one story we didn't tell in the podcast because I didn't know there was a story to tell, and that is the night Lewis's father died and the aftermath of that. So it'll be challenging to listen to, I got to tell you. I'm just like, yeah. It's going to be a viewer discretion advised kind of podcast because it's just the depth of human pain and loneliness, abandonment, and where's God in the midst of that? And yet God's there, and yet he can't see it. And so, yeah, I can't wait. Hopefully in a few weeks, we'll be able to get that up on the My Friend Lewis site and go from there.
Well, and especially with how powerful his story was leading up to these two episodes. I mean, it wasn't like he pulled any punches in the first series. I mean, there was some just like head shaking,
yes,
dabbing your eye experiences of like, okay, what do I do with this? Like, how do I even navigate this? And if you haven't listened to My Friend Lewis yet, you need to go listen to My Friend Lewis. It is an incredibly powerful story. Oh my goodness, I can't wait to hear the next couple of episodes.
And I tell people, just listen to the first half hour. If you can stop listening from there, God bless you. You don't need to listen to the other 11 episodes. But man, I don't know anybody that's listened to the first one and go, oh my gosh, then they're in the second and third. Now people are just binging it because I had a guy call me this week, a vet from the Iraq War, Afghanistan War, but the Middle East kind of conflicts. Mm-hmm. And he's got two friends. He's got them listening to My Friend Lewis. And he said, they're just crying their eyes out. And he said, they call him and just sing ways in their life that God was making himself known to them when they were younger and missed it. And seeing that more clearly in Lewis's story. And I've heard that from a lot of people. I've only heard from one person this, why didn't God do this for me? That was kind of upset. Like, why would Lewis get all that? And I got nothing. Most people I hear from are, oh my goodness, I have missed so many ways in which God put himself in my life. And then I had another friend yesterday send me a picture of a guy wearing Converse shoes under some kind of greenhouse the guy was in. And the guy said, I didn't go see who he was, but I don't know. There's some Converse shoes that they have going. But I love how it's helping people open up to God in a different way and to recognize his fingerprints in their life. Even if it's things like sassy in a license plate in front of me and you go, wow. And I honestly think when we get to eternity, we're going to see lots of ways God kind of did that stuff and we missed it, you know, because we're so preoccupied. We're so hoveled down in our anxieties and our worries that we're just missing the things God would pop up in our life. And I don't like missing those. I'm sure I do. I'm sure I miss zillions of them, but I really enjoy when something like that pops up. It's really an encouragement that just kind of says, like you talk about these cairns in the wilderness to kind of say you're on the trail. And I look at it just that. You're doing what I want you to do is keep on this trail. And there are things right now in my life that I feel like God's asking me to do that are, extraordinarily painful and extraordinarily out of sync with what I would rationally conclude if I was going to determine the course of my own life.
Yeah,
but I promised a long time ago I'd follow God as best I saw him, and what he's asking right now is incredibly difficult. And so I see a thing like last night, we're right behind this car, and just all that it ties together, and I go, it's kind of like a wink, kind of like just like I wrote about Iraq, God just saying, hey, I'm here, I got you, you'll get through this. And so, and then I wanted to read this email before we get into whatever we're talking about today. This is from Gary. He says, and this is, I'm getting a lot of feedback right now, and I want to. I mean, I'm excited about it. This love, rest, play, God calling a new generation, living differently outside the taintedness of religion. Getting a lot of input about that right now. And I know that's part of the road that God wants me to go down. Gary wrote this, your words fit into the season of our lives as we become both more relaxed and more eager to see these young people feel the draw of the Spirit and his love pulling them deeper. It's something I can't teach or force. I can enable and encourage and empower. That's three E's, which is pretty good, but I can engage, encourage, and enable, encourage, and empower. And I really love hearing that from older folks on this journey, not threatened by a new generation, but willing to be alongside it, to encourage, to pray, to enable, to help them discover. And this move of God in people's hearts is indeed amazing, like an underground but unstoppable river. I can't explain yet why your words grabbed me, but I've been thinking about it for almost 2 weeks now. My sense is that it will become clear when I need to know it, and I'll probably say one day, yes, this is what that was all about. I'm also sensing that the institutional efforts of conniving and or contriving and or controlling, there's three C's, this guy's got a gift.
Yeah.
Conniving, contriving, and controlling has an expiration date. And I love that the expression that the life of God finds among normal people in their everyday lives, and it's such a joy to just be available to what God is doing in and around me. I will accept the challenge to rest and be ready, living every day with a joyful expectancy of God and his Jehovah sneaky surprises.
Oh, I love that letter.
It brought me back to these things that God's been stirring in my heart, because I honestly think part of what I've been going through in the last few weeks has been to really challenge that and to destroy. It's almost been like an assault from darkness.
Yeah.
To destroy something God's put in my heart. And it's confused me, I'll be honest. I've been through some real confusion. I've been through some real, I'm just going to settle here until I know what God knows, or at least have a sense of what God knows, and I'm going to follow it. And honestly, I think the first little cracks of dawn started on Monday and Tuesday this week. Just finally felt there wasn't just a difficult obedience,
yeah,
but it was a new freedom. There was a freedom from some of the ways the enemy gets his claws into me. It's still hard, but if that's the fruit of it, if that's where this is going, that it removes those tentacles and it allows me to breathe freer and be more at rest and more at play in God's love, then I'm all in. That's what's going on in my heart. I know that's kind of, people go, I don't know what you're talking about. And I, believe me, if I could tell you, I would. I really can't, so I'm not. I'm excited for about what God's doing. I know that rest, love, and play stuff is the way we need to lean into. And I think to be realistic about that, what that means is things in your life that are toxic and damaging and dishonest, those you've got to lean out of. You just have to.
Yeah.
Particularly if you're a person following Jesus, you want to right the wrongs and you want to fix the lies and you want to. But none of that bears fruit. It's the love, rest, and play. And you know that Jesus did talk about that, shaking the dust off your feet. And you can't, if your peace doesn't abide somewhere, then you don't have a responsibility to stay there. You have the freedom to walk out. Not easy, because it's people I love that are involved, but it is what I sense God's put in my heart.
I had a really good conversation with my supervisor. There'd been some relational tension there off and on throughout the year. I'd had a pretty bad experience leading up to my employment at the company that I'm currently at a previous company or previous school that I was at, and really went into that experience very, very cautious in regards to the intention specifically of leadership in my life and their agenda and how they wanted to influence my life. And had a really, really healing conversation, very good conversation with my supervisor. And yet in the midst of that conversation, she said something to me that has just continued to resonate with me. She said, Kyle, my encouragement to you would be to assume the best of people's intentions, and at very worst, assume that there's more information that you don't have yet. That was really intriguing to me, because I just felt God kind of pull at my heart with that in regards to, Kyle, assume that my intentions are the best for you. And at very worst, that you don't know a piece of my love yet, or that I'm doing something that you can't see yet. Trust that my intentions for you are always the best. And that was really intriguing to me. That I was sitting there in a business meeting, like an exit interview, and was just like, ooh, oh, wow. Okay, Lord.
I love that. I thought you were initially applying that to your boss, you know, assume the best, and they're going, what? But to God? Yeah.
I think she was kind of alluding that to her, like, assume that my intentions are the best, and at worst, I don't have, you know, like, you don't have all the information. And I was like, okay, but like for me, like, it went deeper than that, because God's really been inviting me into a journey as well, where I feel like I'm very much in uncharted waters, uncharted season, where I've been journaling about it quite a bit. And it feels like the difference between backcountry navigation and front range navigation. So for our listeners, you can't see what Wayne has in his background, but he actually has the logo from the God Journey in the background. It has a very clear path. there's people walking on that path, and they're walking through a forest. And I feel like some seasons in our life are that way. But then other seasons, the trail comes to an end and we're standing there staring at just untrailed, uncharted wilderness that, yeah, there, you know, there's some landmarks to help us navigate. There might be some topographical maps, that kind of thing, but there isn't the clear cut trail. And yet there's still that invitation into the backcountry. And will you trust me in that?
Yeah, it's like Jeff and my podcast, Jeff Andreessen and I did a podcast about going beyond the maps. You know, it's one thing to travel inside what you know and it feels secure about. And then there comes the moment where God invites you maybe to go beyond that, beyond your comfort. I know you were talking earlier about believing the best of intentions. And because I always give people that. I travel, I meet with people. Yeah. I always trust that people's intentions are genuine, honest, and real. Until I find out they aren't. And then trying to live like people have the best of intentions when they don't, when they're scheming and manipulating things. And so I think there has to be real discernment in our lives that God gives us for that, right? Because it hasn't, interestingly enough, even though I've been betrayed a few times by people I love, I've really guarded my heart from being jaded. I'm just going, you know, the next relationship I'm in. I'm in with you until you prove to me that you're not here for what God's about. You're here for some agenda that's darker than that. And I need some real convincing. I don't get there very easily with people.
Yeah.
Because I know the enemy tricks us up and people, you know, nobody has pure motives about anything, including me. So there's going to be things that get out. They go, okay, well, that's not the real me. Okay, great. I'm in. We'll keep going. But then there comes a time at which you recognize, you know what, you got to come back to God's intentions are always good. And yeah, we can get the end of the trail and feel like, wow, everything's blown apart. And God's saying, you have no idea what's coming your way. You have no idea. I didn't lead you here to hurt you. I led you here because I have new freedom for you. I have new life for you. And I've got really good things in mind for where I want you to live in my life. That doesn't mean there aren't painful circumstances that confront our lives. I continue to get the email, if God loved me, why is this bad, sucky stuff happening to me? He should fix it. And I'm going, yeah, that's not the way this kingdom works. He doesn't fix all the sucky stuff. In a very broken world with a very loving father, and he's willing to walk us through it. And if we're going to sit in the trail and pout until he fixes it, we're not going far on this journey.
Yeah.
Because he just wants to be with you. Come with me. I've got a way through this, but come with me. Don't figure it out yourself. So,
how have you untangled the purity of what God offers with that? And his unconditional love in that regard, as far as trusting his intentions are always good for you, and yet holding a space of wisdom when dealing with people. Because I hear what you're saying, the distinction between God's heart for us versus people who, even with their best intentions, still probably have some type of agenda. They can't help it. And we all have that, the bias and whatnot. I guess, how do you bring that to human relationships without being jaded and not allow it to taint your perspective with God or your perspective of your relationship with God?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what you're asking yet. If you're asking, how do I, if people turn out to be hurtful, toxic, destructive, is that a commentary back on God for me? It's not.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I see God as a very different part. I see people in the world as very broken. I see my life as broken, so God's mending it. So I think where I find relationships toxic is when someone thinks they're perfect in it and you're the pile of dung they're having to deal with. I go, okay, I don't even give that to myself. I don't think I'm perfect about anything. I'm meandering down a trail trying to sort out God's direction, and when I do, it's fabulous, and when I don't, it kind of gets rugged. I guess I don't get jaded because a long time ago, one of the things that God shared with me about loving people is you can love people without becoming their victim. So I'm not worried about if I meet somebody that I'm loving and it turns out they're toxic on the backside. My first thought is maybe God's brought this into my life so I can help. So I'm going to prod around that. Is there a way to open a door?
Yeah.
If there isn't, then I'm going to back away because life's too short to try to fix people who are not, first of all, too short to even try and fix people, period. I should just stop there. Yeah. Not my job, not my responsibility. But to be alongside people whom God is touching and transforming, if they're not cooperating, if they're not part of that process. So I guess I don't mind getting into relationships that may turn harmful, because I don't mind walking away. My security is not attached to them. So if I go, okay, that's not working, God's got a million other options and people, and I am surrounded by people I love who know the real me, who love me both in my weaknesses and in my strengths. I have that. So I guess that's, I just don't ever feel like someone's victim. Even if I'm disappointed that something goes away that I loved, I'll just go, well, you know what? That was a fun journey while it lasted. And I just think okay. That's, yeah, you ride things as long as they're valuable and fruitful and helpful. And then whether it was Savior's community, whether it was some things with the shack, whether it was, you know, whatever, there's time to just walk away and say, life's too short to be caught up in toxicity. Mm. Now, if people who are toxic are introspective in the sense of, I'm not sure I want to be this way. And I don't see my life like you do. Can we talk? And yeah, if there's an open exchange of ideas and maybe in the end we don't agree, that's different than someone who's toxic. Someone who's toxic is, I'm right, you're wrong, I get to kill you.
Yeah.
And you go, yeah, okay. See, I'm not in that. But, or if they're kind of point out all your frailties all the time, it's not hard for me. I don't think it's hard for people around me to say, Wayne, this is where you're weak. Because I've never hidden my weaknesses. I know I'm a mixed bag of, there's some good gifts in my life. There is, that I get to share with the world and get to watch the fruit unfold. And I love that. And there's also things in my life of insecurities and jealousies and less of that than there used to be. But there's still things that raise their head at times. My reluctance to follow God down a path that I'm pretty clear on. But I still am reluctant, not for any other reason than this is going to close some doors that my heart hurts to close. But and it may not be close them forever. It may just be close them in the interim. But
as you say that, like I'm not even sure what that looks like. Because, you know, for me, in some regards, I say that and I'm just kind of processing out loud right at the moment because I'm trying to wrap my head around it. I guess I don't know how to recognize the toxicity and in some regards not feel wounded by that and to be able to stay in it and to prod around and actually ask like, okay, how could I help this or how could I walk with this? Or is this person like your first response was, well, you know, is this a situation where God is wanting me to walk with this person and journey with this person? That's not my first question when I realize that somebody like that I'm doing relationship with is toxic. That's not the first place my mind goes. The first place my mind goes is, okay, how do I protect myself here? Or what do I do here with this now that I recognize the toxicity? Now what? That's the first place my mind goes often is now what, not how can I help this person or did God bring me into this person's life to walk with them through this toxicity?
Well, I think that has to do too with where our freedom, right?
Yeah.
It may be if that toxicity is going to strip me bare in a way that's condemning and damning, then yeah, I think that may be the response God wants. Walk away. I think as freedom grows in our heart, and so then I'm not defined by their toxicity.
Yeah.
I'm pretty comfortable with that. I'm pretty, if you're lying about me, that doesn't define me. I used to do the line a long time ago. If you worry about what people think of you, you're owned by anyone willing to lie about you. So yes, I know a toxic person can lie about me and destroy an awful lot of relationships around me. I've watched that happen. But I also know this, your true friends, people who really love you and know you and care about you, they're not going to believe the toxicity.
That's true. Very true.
So, and if you have to go fight the toxicity and go to everybody and say, hey, that didn't happen, blah, 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 and you got to fix it all, now they just own you. So I think transformative in my life was that Isaiah passage in the Message where Isaiah's groaning at God about that. Yeah, God, everybody hates me. Why aren't you doing anything to fix it? And Isaiah's just pouting up big time, which remember Isaiah's calling. How long, O Lord, when God calls him, I need somebody to go to Israel and say this. And he goes, how long, O Lord? And God tells him at the beginning of this, until everyone in Israel rejects you. So it wasn't unclear to Isaiah. God wasn't, you know, tricking him into something like, I'm going to make you a great preacher and everybody's going to love you. It wasn't that. And so when he complains about, and then in Eugene Peterson's translating this passage in Isaiah, God responds to him, which I was reading this at a time of real pain in my life going, I'm with Isaiah on this. And God says, do you realize, Isaiah, I don't waste 1 ounce of my energy on public relations. I act. And how people respond to it is part of their journey. So And I've really bought into that in my own life. I'm going to do the best I know as God leads and guides me. I know I love people. I know I'm a compassionate heart. I didn't grow up that way. I know that's changing in my life. So I don't mind extending that love to people, even beyond their ability to respond to it, in hopes that that love might win them in the same way that Jesus' love won me. Mm. But that's a process, right? So if I'm not there yet, I might be better in the face of toxic, the boundaries book by Cloud and Townsend, to set boundaries and say, I'm not going to walk alongside toxic people. Life's too short to be attacked by Christians who are going to try and change you for God's good or tell you you should go to church or you should do this. Life's too short for that. So there are times to walk away. And then when God increases a space in your life so you have ability to love in that without it getting to you inside, that's key to me. Because once something starts getting to me inside, that's when I go, okay, now we've crossed a line.
Yeah.
So now I need to put up some space. And God always has other stuff. God always has other people. And God always has a way of bringing truth to light. And it may take years. Some of the things I've been through, it took years for the truth to finally be out.
Yeah.
But me trying to tell people who are hostile to me what the truth is, there's no advantage in it. So I don't waste my breath. Yeah. I look at Jesus before Pilate and go, yeah, you're being accused of stuff. It's false. The Pharisees, the Caiaphas, all that stuff. He could have opened his mouth and maybe, I mean, he could have fixed it. He could have blasted them all into oblivion if he wanted to. But he just knew, you know what? Silence. I just lay down my life here. This is a bigger purpose God has in mind. And it involves my death. And even go through that, he turns around and says, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. And I just go, what? They did know what they were doing. They lied about him. They schemed about him. They bargained with Pilate to have him killed and murdered. Yeah. And he's still sitting there saying, Father, forgive them. And what he means, I think, is not that they don't know the circumstance, but they don't often know the bondage out of which that action comes.
Yeah.
They've been abused, hurt in some way, and this is their response to it. So their fears about whatever Jesus would cause a reaction from the Roman Empire, whatever they were afraid of and needing to kill him and afraid of losing their power, they weren't really about, we're killing the Son of God. We know we're doing that. No, they didn't know they were doing that.
Yeah.
What they did, they were living out of their fear and their anxiety, and Jesus could say about them. And that's what I learn about and I'm not always there with people. This is a process. But to get to the place, Stefan talked about this at a podcast toward the end of the year last year. Father, forgive them. They know not what they do is the ultimate act of loving. Because you realize life's more complicated than people know and they're captive to things they don't understand. And that keeps your heart tender. If you can get there, it keeps your heart tender. It doesn't excuse them that Father, forgive them. They know not what they, everybody say, well, you just let them off the hook. They're still on the hook. They're still the crap in their life. Pardon me to our UK listeners, the stuff in their life that broke them and they don't know how to relate to yet. They're still living in that darkness. So it's not like they're off the hook. The darkness is still there. And it clouds their life in ways we can't even know.
Not that they're free, because they're still in the bondage, in the pain, in the turmoil of the wounds that created that space to where they're responding from that place. They're still acting out of that pain.
Yeah, and Jesus dying and then resurrecting, it's only going to complicate their lives even further.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Because to sort through that, they've got to go further into the darkness. They got to pay guards to lie. They've got to kill the young Christians who are saying that Jesus rose from the dead. Their lives are going to get worse. So him saying, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do is an act of compassion in hopes that they'll come to a better place. But it's not the excuse that lets them off the hook. They're still being destructive and will continue to be.
That draws me back into some things that I've been journaling about just over the last couple of weeks as this has been moving and shaking and feeling an invitation from God to step into more availability and more trust in him. And yet there's things crumbling. There's these structures inside that are crumbling that I've placed a lot of hope in, that I've leaned on, that God is gracious to saying, look, like, I can't have you continuing to lean on these. And graciously, I'm going to give you an invitation. Are you going to walk off the trail? Are you going to come into the backcountry with me? And are you going to allow those things to crumble or not? I was journaling through these things, and I wrote down four questions as I was processing this. And the thing that I was really processing as a husband was stepping away from a secure salary job position and moving more into a faith-based space of, Lord, what does your provision look like in this? Not just financially, but emotionally and for our family and spiritually. And four questions came up as I was just holding this in front of him. And they were, what structure needs to or is crumbling in my life? What is my natural response to that crumbling? Like, how do I try to regain control? How do I try to take the duct tape out and duct tape that structure back together so that it will keep standing, hopefully? And then what does patience look like in this season? And then what about your love, Father, do I not trust or know that if I did, I would be at rest right now? And that's like, man, as I've walked through that, for me, one of the primary structures that was crumbling is having that job security, having the benefits, having that paycheck, and then also having a plan B just in case for some crazy reason that contract for some reason disappears, that I've got a plan B to protect myself as well. And man, Wayne, I had the most beautiful conversation with my dad this week. He and I were just talking, and my mom made the comment, Kyle, your dad never had a red flag about you doing this and about you stepping out in faith and walking in this and taking this journey. And I just paused, and I was like, and dad was in the room. He was standing there. And I was like, really? I was like, because I felt like you were going to be the person that I would have to work the hardest to explain why I was doing this, or to justify why I felt like I was doing this. And he's like, Kyle, I've been in self-employment, and I have situations and questions like this come up multiple times a year. He's like, as a business owner and he's like, I've been doing this for over 30 years, and I still have those question marks come up as far as like, what do I do? What's crumbling here? You know, how do I navigate this? And he's like, no, Kyle, I haven't ever had a red flag about you stepping out in this and walking in faith in this, using your skill sets that God has cultivated in you in a different way. And that
that's something.
It rocked my world. Sure. Like, I was like, here's the man that I felt like imparted to me, like, make sure you have a good job and make sure you have the benefits and make sure you have the stability. And then his response is, no, I haven't even been living that way. And he's like, and he literally said, I'm sorry if I've conveyed that to you. Huh. I'm sorry if I haven't trained you to recognize and to walk in faith in that, and that I haven't modeled that in a way that you've understood that. He's like, yes, I wanted to set you up in ways so that you don't have to be in that place where you're constantly living in this like scarcity mentality where you're not living in fear of where your needs are going to be met. But he's like, Kyle, he's like, I'm sorry, because I haven't even been walking that way in the last 20, almost 30 years that he's been doing this business. He's like, every single day, it's like, okay, Lord, how are you going to sustain and provide for me now because of whatever uncertainty that's coming up? And that just, it was so, like, I don't even know how to put it into words, because it was one of those moments where this place was crumbling in me, and the primary place that I thought it was coming from wasn't even the truth. That wasn't even where it was coming from. Now, yes, he might have passed on some of those things, but to have him encourage that and to speak into that was like, wow, Lord. It was very similar to that license plate of, ooh, okay, Lord, there's a wink there, but there's also like, it was more impactful than even just like a playful wink of, no, I've got you. It was like a, ooh.
Yeah, that's great. God is really able. I think when we lean into the way God speaks and the way he works, and I know, you know, people have some weird stuff about God. God told me to, and then they do the weirdest stuff. But when you really are looking to follow God and you don't operate in that false confidence stuff, you're just learning to follow. There are, I just see endless ways God confirms what he wants. He doesn't just, drop a whisper in there, and if you missed it, man, life's going to really suck for you. I just think he kind of puts, that's a major one. That's a major confirmation of saying, okay, if my dad, the one voice I thought wouldn't be supportive of this is.
Yeah.
Now that's just a big, that's huge. That's a big plus.
And it just baffles me. Like as he continues to invite me into that, that's one of those big Karens, right, on the trail, because that's the beauty of a Karen on a trail is you can't see the trail. There is no trail there.
Right.
Like, because it's on terrain that they can't cut a trail. And so they just have to pile up a rock pile every once in a while to let you know, yes, you're still going in the right direction, yeah. even though you can't see the trail. And even though you're not sure where you're going, like, here's a landmark to say, yes, you are still on the right path. Yeah. So it was just really interesting to be able to press into that. And as I'm walking in this and he's unpacking, like, my natural responses. So how do I try to gain control? How do I take that duct tape and try to tape that tower back together, or that foundation back together? That's been really, it's good. It's not fun. It's not an right. easy process to look at that, you know, because my response was be creative, be strategic, whatever you need to do, make it happen, play the game, sell it, use your strengths to force it into existence, create every advantage possible, fight for it, don't back down, and desperately go after the next thing. And then I got done with that list because I was just like honest journaling, like yeah, what do I do like when I feel like I'm losing control? And then I just felt God say, so what about love, rest, and play? It's like, okay, like literally the book is sitting there beside me with the title next to me as I'm journaling this. And I was just laughing. I was like, nothing, absolutely nothing.
That's what I was thinking when you were reading through that list. I'm going, how exhausting.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's no play in that. There's no rest in that. There's no trust in that. It's just.
That's what we do though, tired. Isn't it? You know, particularly with things we've taken security in when they start to crumble or. Even God invites us out. You don't need that anymore. And you're going, yeah. kind of sort of do. And if I don't have that, I definitely need a plan B. If you don't really come through, because we've really been taught that God isn't trustworthy. And I think that's the fear that we all face. That's the lie of the garden. That's the lie in the garden. That's the lie at the cross, that Jesus doesn't really know what he's doing, that we can't follow him. And it really, and I know counter to this is all the faked up people who pretend they're following Jesus who aren't. And you can point at endless people who've gone out to walk by faith, which meant I'm going to live off begging from my friend's money so I can do what I want to do and not have a real job. And I think for conscientious people, those examples make it more difficult for people like you to go, okay, I think God's calling me to something here. But all the examples are pretty creepy of people I know who've tried this.
Yeah.
But when you really, when God invites us, and I think, I mean, if it's true that it's time to set things right, that things are changing in the earth, that the wind of the Spirit is shifting and moving, that means some things are going to crumble. They are.
Yes.
I like when you said that to me a couple of weeks ago. You talked about, you know, what's in my life is crumbling. And I started, okay, what's in my life crumbling? And I don't have to look far. There are things crumbling. Yeah. And you go, I don't have to put this back together. See, it wasn't like, where's the duct tape? It was a relief to me. I don't have to put this back together. I don't.
Yeah.
I have some distance in this journey with Jesus that my heart doesn't go to the places it used to go to, which would be panic and fear and all that. I go, that's crumbling. Awesome. What's next? What are you bringing? And for people who aren't there yet, I love the response that you're plotting out and saw that things I would normally do. And then God saying, hey, love, rest, play, come. There's a different way to live this. And then that whole thing about what about your love? I don't know that if I knew it, I'd be at rest here. And that's not a question you get to answer, right? That's a question God gets to answer over time. Just as you go down this road, I know for me, as I went down that road, God does things where you go, oh, you really do know best. And if you never go down that road, if you're always doing what you think is best, you never see the fruit of doing what God asks and how stupid it seems in the moment. And then the fruit it bears down the road, then you start, that's where you kind of get your legs on a different journey. Yeah. Wow, he really knows better. But as Jesus said, look, if you're going to save your life, you're going to lose it. If your job is to save you, you're going to make all the decisions that are going to make God look like he's unfaithful to you. But if you lean into the journey I'm inviting you on, and it seems stupid to you, and it seems risky to you, and I'd rather find a trail that's well marked in the woods, and you're then there's nothing that we're going to see about God's unfolding beauty if we're going to walk on our trail. His beauty's on his trail.
Yeah.
And he's not still beautiful and not still with us, but we're going to miss it because we've put together the structures that we find our false security in. So yeah. We never find our true security in the Father's affection and goodness, even in the midst of a broken world, that God is still good. He's still loving. And though he's not fixing everything, he's inviting us always into deeper freedom, deeper joy, deeper life. Man, yeah. I love that. I put a little note down somewhere about crumbling. Look for stuff that's crumbling and rejoice. Oh, Jesus is saying, count it all joy when people lie about you, exclude you. Count it all joy. And you go, it's not joyful. It sucks. Yes, yeah. And it does. But the joy is in the aftermath. The joy. If I hadn't walked away from that church when I did, I could have fought my way back. If I had done that, my life would have had a very different trajectory. Mm. And not that God wouldn't have come and offered other ways, but that was monumental for me and how God worked it out. And then the things I'm involved in now, just stupid little things that become just this friendship with Lewis that's become a major piece of my heart and life right now. I never expected it to be. He was just somebody that I kind of knew and was nice to because he was working at my house.
Yeah.
And now he's become one of my closest friends. And I just love his journey. And I love what that journey shapes in me. Tessa and her book, I love how that came out. And just being alongside her at this stage of her journey has been a joy. Being alongside you and Jess. I mean, just I look at all the serendipitous things that you would have plotted that out in a 5-year plan. Man. None of those things would have happened.
No. Not a chance.
Because they came up in the moment and receiving it and responding to it was what happened. And I've had lots of other people that I've had those moments with where God's inviting them on a different journey. And for whatever reason, they panic and go back to something secure.
Yeah.
And I look at them years later, I'm going, gee, you had such a gift in front of you.
Yeah.
And you couldn't see it. So you went back into your own way of managing your experience. And man, if we can encourage people to take the path to the end and then see what God has beyond it. And God will. God's not ungracious. He will. He knows how hard this is for us to learn. He'll put these little sassies, Erics, Karens in our life so that we can embrace what he wants us to do and know.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.